Thank you very much, and good morning to all of you. You must be the weird group, right? Because who wants to come and hear a session on your voices? I mean, how many of you go to church and have heard a sermon on voices? One or two? One? Two. Gosh, that's amazing. Two out of, what have we got, 150 here? Yes, it definitely does have a little ding on the weirdometer, I quite accept. But I think that it is important as a topic, and I hope to convince you of that, because I'm trying to write this book as to avert what's one of the world's biggest tragedies, which is that too many people fail to show up to their own lives. You remember that Oliver Wendell Holmes line said, "Most people go to their grave with their music still inside them." What a tragedy that is. It's a beautiful world. We're unique. Can we be totally present to the moment, to others, to the sacred, whatever, and really offer our music out? And I think that one of the ways in which we fail to is because some of the voices that are hardwired into us, perhaps from culture, family, whatever, prevent that, prevent living out and being present. A voice, as I use it, is just streams of sentences in our heads that occur frequently, right? Not just one time. And they carry an emotional charge. So you feel them as well as hear them. Often they come so quickly, in fact, that you just feel them. And it's a recurrent inner dialogue that we hear and feel, and they're powerful. Negative voices are the obvious ones. You know, I'm no good at that. I'm not good looking enough. No one's going to like me. You know, I even have a voice when Jude said, you know, this is the literature and words tent. Literature and words, that sounds odd. I'm not into literature and words. This is not a book that's literature. You know, there's my voice going off saying, come on, what am I doing here? A negative voice. And a negative voice is just trying to shrink us down to a bundle of anxieties. And we're more than that, aren't we? But then positive voices are also very important. Positive voices are things like, I'm going to be the best lawyer in the world. I'm the best at making money for this charity. I'm going to be a wonderful mother. And you think, well, what's wrong with that? Well, the danger with a positive voice is that it tends to attach our identity to what we do, to achievement. And in the end, we've got an achievement addiction, rather than living out of a deeper self where we are made to receive and reflect the love of God. And so, if it's not our life's destiny to be dominated by these voices that are trying to take us away from our deeper identity. And when I talk about voices, I think we're talking about identity wars. A voice, most of the time, is trying to steal your identity and push it into an area of where you're just a bundle of anxieties or you're a set of achievements. And that's not good enough in terms of expressing our uniqueness and beauty in this amazing world. They're not going away, I think, but we have the power to make sure they no longer steal our identity, but lead us to our deeper selves and our deeper identities. That's the idea. And it's been dawning on me for a while how powerful these voices are. And even on a societal and cultural level, not just an individual level. And I was traveling around India as a journalist in the early 1990s, and I happened to interview the architect of Hindu extremism at the time. It was a man called Lal Advani. And Advani, at this time, of course, the Hindu extremists were not well known, and they were electorally very insignificant. They had two seats in parliament. And Advani, you know, the idea of Hindu extremism is to say the northern Gangetic plain of India should be scoured clear of those who are not Hindus. It's a religiously nationalist ideology, quite extreme. And as I say, it was unimportant. At the time, I was interviewing Advani. And I said, well, you know, how are you going to get into power? Because he said to me, we'll be in power in 10 years. And I thought I was just humoring a lunatic. So I said, how are you going to do that? He said, oh, I will plant a voice into the head and heart of millions of Hindus in India. I will plant a voice. And I said, what's that voice going to be? Oh, he said, it will be this. Christians and Muslims are stealing India away from Hindus, and we must do something about it now. And I remember thinking, okay, but he succeeded. Advani succeeded. The world's largest democracy was taken over by the Hindu extremists. And even now, under Modi, Mr. Modi is the Prime Minister, he's very extreme, the pluralistic character of India is changing. A voice was so powerful. The tactics are amazing. How he managed it will make a very long book. But we'll have to wait until he dies, I think, to write it all down. He's rather a litigious person. But it's going to make an amazing story, because India's a democracy. You know, the Hindu extremists were voted into power legitimately. So I just remember thinking, wow, you know, that's an incredibly powerful voice. And look at the impact it's having on a country of 1.2 billion. And then, of course, on a more individual level, this started to hit me as well. I was once traveling a lot around China, and I was doing a special study of Chinese churches and sermons in Chinese churches. And it was interesting that it didn't matter which church I was in, whether it was Catholic, Protestant, whether it was above ground, whether it was below ground, the sermons were all very, very similar. And they were all rather exhausting task lists on how to deserve the love of God. It was like you walked into church and there were 10 commandments and you came out with 100 more. And I remember saying to someone, I said, you know, am I the only person that feels heavy after this? You know, I've got to be more pure, I've got to try harder to receive the love of God. And I said, why is this a characteristic of Chinese preaching? Because it really was hitting me quite hard. And someone said, oh, you have to understand how we grow up in a typical Chinese family. They said, in a typical Chinese family, not that they're all typical, they said, well, if you're a child, from about the years of 1 to 7, you are the apple of your parents' eye. You're just indulged, you're loved, it's wonderful. But then, about the 6, 7, 8, suddenly, bang, everything changes. And you have to perform. You're going to school, come back with an A, or the family is disgraced. And the pressure builds, and the pressure builds, and suddenly, a child who once experienced unconditional love from a parent now finds that it's conditional. And then, of course, that simply gets globbed onto God. And God becomes a Chinese parent. So that when you go to church, God is looking at you saying, I don't know that you're making the grade. Here's how you have to do to make the grade, and then I'll love you. And that was why these sermons were sounding so hard, and people were almost crushed by them. That's that voice again. And of course, it's somewhat familiar to me. Although I was raised in Northern Ireland, I'm actually a Scot. And I remember coming back from my primary school, waving my spelling test, and I think I'd got 10 out of 10. And I said to my mother, you know, what do you think of this? And she just looked at me and she said, don't go getting a big head. Don't go getting a big head. You know, and of course, she's trying to help. She's not being cruel. She's trying to prepare me for life And the fact that the world is a pretty difficult place, and it just doesn't say, gosh, you know, aren't you fantastic? The world just ignores you, and she's getting me ready for that. Don't get above your station. Don't think too highly of yourself. But it morphs over time, if you're not careful, into a deep-seated, undeserving voice. I am a squashed crumb for Jesus. Should I get all this blessing? No, not for me. You know. So again, you know, I thought, look at the power of that. I mean, how many Christians are in China? Over 100 million. Many of them are affected by that deep, undeserving voice. 6 out of 10 must try harder. That's what they hear very often on a Sunday morning. From God, they think. But it's a voice. So, if you can see what a massive joy stealer that is. So, these are powerful things. And so, do we have them? What's a voice, and do we have one? So, let me just try a little experiment with you. Check in with yourself as you hear this little piece of scripture. It's the Annunciation of the Angel Gabriel to Mary. And it's in the Message translation, right? I'm going to read it. And check in into your head and heart what your reaction is. What fires? What thoughts come in? Okay? Let me read it to you. Good morning. This is the angel speaking to Mary. Good morning. You are beautiful with God's love. Beautiful inside and out. God be with you. I sit with that for a minute. What's coming up? What's coming in? Good morning. You are beautiful with God's beauty. Beautiful inside and out. God be with you. Now, what would be your reactions to that? Let me just, you can shout it out if you like. What did you feel? What happened? You don't have to, let's hear. Did anything happen? Warmth. Yes, what? Warmth. Warmth, that's lovely. Yeah, you felt beautiful with God's love. That's nice. Undeserving voice, yes, aha. Yes, that's right. I'm not deserving of this. The angel can't be speaking to me. Anything else? Yes. What's coming next? That's an experienced voice there, I would say. Yes. Any other reactions?
Affirmed. I used to be.
Sorry?
Affirmed.
Affirmed, yes. Good. Positive. Yes. Somebody said?
I used to be
beautiful. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Voice of regret, essentially. Yeah. Well, you get the idea that some people will be sitting here saying, well, I don't have any reaction at all. I don't feel anything. And that's also an important reaction, because one of the key voices that we often have in life is a fantasy voice that takes us away from ourselves. We're actually on another planet. I'm up here speaking, but you're actually somewhere else. You might be lying on a yacht in the Bahamas right now because you're not here. And that's quite difficult to do. And of course, you know, teenagers particularly are always trying on identities. So very often they're imagining that there's someone else or somewhere else. Fantasy voices. And addictions, of course, can get into us here. A porn addiction, which is very common now with the internet, is basically a voice that says, I don't want to be me. I want to be out there. I want to be this person. But you're away from where you are. The reality in which you live is not of interest to you anymore. And you're not present to the people around you. Yes, and indeed some others would definitely say, that's a lovely voice, but I'm not Mary. That's not for me. I'm not beautiful. Beautiful inside and out, come on. I know what I'm capable of. I know what's in my heart. Bad stuff has happened. Nice for Mary, a nice little 14-year-old girl, lovely and innocent. That's not me. That's not for me. And that's, I kind of like that undeserving voice. And what does that do? It snatches away the experience before you can even have it. And somebody else might have maybe a more skeptical voice where they would say, yes, okay, I get that. But you know, I'm not so sure about all these people that hear voices. You know, I've had enough of Christians who said, the Lord told me this and the Lord told me that. And I run a mile from them now. And anyway, I don't know that it's a good idea to hear all these audible voices. And so there's a skeptical... Now, of course, it's important to be skeptical up to a point, isn't it? Because you want to be a Christian or a believer with a brain. But the danger is that the skepticism drives away any possibility of actually receiving the love of God because it gets deflected out. These are how voices work. So so we have these types of voices, and I was once when I was talking about this in church, they said, well, you know, have you got anything to offer from the Bible on this? It was a particular type of church, as you might realize. And I said, well, did Jesus have voices? And they said, well, I suppose he did, yes. And of course, you remember, Jesus hears voices essentially from above three times. His first one is at his baptism, where a voice from heaven says, "Use this my beloved son, with whom I am well pleased." And then Jesus is marched into the desert, it seems, and he hears voices again, right? The three temptations are voices. Well, we don't know in what form this happens. Does the devil take a physical form and speak to him materially? Or does Jesus hear these voices in his head? The scripture is quite reticent about that, and perhaps wisely so. But look at what the voices say. You know, the first temptation really is, remember, Jesus is baptized and he knows who he is, God's beloved son. But what is he supposed to do? What kind of a Messiah is he going to be? That's what he has to figure out in the desert. And along comes a voice from the pit that says, you know, I think that you should set up your life to solve the hunger problem of first century Palestine. And you will be well remembered for giving everybody bread through miraculous provision. And Jesus realizes that actually that is a false priority. Because when he says, you know, people don't live except by the words of God alone, he's realizing my job as a Messiah is to preach a message as well as to be a hearer. And so in a sense, in reacting to the devil, he gets a sense of what kind of a Messiah is he going to be. He's going to preach the kingdom first and foremost. He's got a message as a Messiah. Then, of course, the devil says, well, okay, I can work in with that. I can work in with that. Now, listen, if you want to preach, if you want to have a message and you want to really make an impact, then you're better to be a king. Because everybody has to listen to kings, don't they? If you don't listen to the king, he can chop your head off. So he said, I'll give you all these kingdoms, and therefore you'll have the status to get an audience. And Jesus basically says, I think that's false power, actually. I'm just going to be an unknown rabbi. And so he gets a sense of how he's going to do it. And then, of course, finally, the devil says, well, okay, if you're going to do all that, you're going to need a real sense that God's with you. So let's arrange a really spectacular deliverance here. Throw yourself down from the temple. The angels will come and people will see it. I mean, that would be remarkable, wouldn't it? It'd be like John Sentamu throwing himself off the tower at York Minster, and miraculously no bones were broken. Right? What a sermon that would be. Wouldn't have to say a word. And so Jesus said, why don't you do something like that to know that God's really with you? He said, I don't need to. I've been spoken to. I'm his beloved son. That will do. And so Jesus gets a sense of what Messiah he's going to be. What's his messiahship going to look like? The voices, as it were, helped. So it tells you two things about voices. One we've been saying is that they're out to steal our identity a little bit. Just like just like those voices were out to steal Jesus' identity away from really being the kind of Messiah that people like me would certainly want to follow. And they can actually be reframed to help. A voice is not always something that is completely negative. If we know how to deal with it, it might actually help us to our destiny, to our understanding of what we need to be and how we need to be in the world. If we can talk right back to this voice. The voices are not, I don't know that we can get rid of voices. I may be wrong on this, but I think they're probably here for a reason. And if we know how to deal with them, they can actually turn into things, instead of oppressing us, they can actually lead us to our deeper selves, if we know what to do. So, those are voices. Jesus had them. They can be reframed for good. So negative and positive voices are obviously ones that we know about. Negative voices can take very extreme forms. I was asking a set of Pakistani ladies what their voice was. There were about 20 of them. And I said, what's your primary voice that you had when you were growing up and so on? And they went into a wee huddle and then came back. And they said, this is the voice that is always inside us. I am the property of men. I am the property of men. And I said, is that a voice you actually hear in church? They said, unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, yes. Now, that's a heavy voice, isn't it? That's a negative voice. I'm no good. I'll mess this up. I'm past it. I'm not good enough. And a negative voice is usually to do, as I say, with an inadequacy, some sort of inadequacy. It might be fair, might be quite fair. We don't look like Brad Pitt, you know, and we just have to accept that. But what's the voice going to do? And say, well, then you shouldn't have any confidence. You know, it adds on and creates this oppression. And it's trying to prevent us living out of this deeper place. Then you get positive voices. Now, this is another tricky one because people think, well, a positive voice must be good. And of course, again, it depends how far you push it. I'm going to get through this. I remember meeting a man who said, my job is to be the best surgeon in the world for God. And he was an amazing surgeon. I met him in Los Angeles. And I thought, good for you. But one day, he got a disease that made his hand shake, and he could no longer perform surgery in his early 40s. And he went to pieces because that was his identity. He couldn't handle life not being the greatest surgeon in the world for God. But is it our deepest destiny to be doing something, to be achieving something, or is there more? And the danger often with a positive voice is that it wants to shrink us down to just activities and achievements when there's a deeper self lying and waiting for us. So if you want, St. Ignatius always says, you know, what is our deepest identity? We are from love, of love, for love, he says. And I think at our deepest level, this is what I'm arguing, is that we are a group of love relationships. We're not primarily about what we do. Doing is important. But down deep, we are a group of love relationships. And most of us, if you try to assess your life in terms of achievement, you'll always come up short. We used to live in Cambridge, and we met some very, very clever people. And you'd meet these amazing professors that were right at the top of the profession, wrote these amazing abstruse books, very celebrated. And yet, when you got to know them, they were afflicted by what's very common. It's called imposter voice. When are they going to find out that I don't really know what I'm talking about? When are they going to find out? And they're plagued by this. So I have these voices. If we have these voices, they're strong. I think if we're unaware of what they're doing to our lives, they're probably ruining it. But if we become aware and know how to deal with them, then I think that actually they will end up renewing our life. This is the promise of it. And just to give you the ideas of the ways in which we the suggestions, I have a kind of, there are five tactics that I talk about in dealing with voices. I'm not going to explain them in any great detail, but I'll just give you a sense of, I'm sitting in the British Library and I'm writing this book. And immediately that voice comes in that says, "Who do you think you are? You're not a psychologist. Come on. You should be leaving this to a clinical psychologist. They know what they're talking about. You're straying onto their territory. What do you know? How could you possibly offer something on this?" Now, what do you do with a voice like that? Would you, if you were to follow through on it, I would stop writing. Wouldn't produce this. So I suggest five words. Now, the first, and the blindingly obvious, and I don't say that these are unique to me and anything like that. I'm just pushing them together because they don't often get pushed together. That's a five methods. One is just simply talk back to them. Gee, how smart is that? Talk back to them. But what I mean is talk back to the voice with the truth of your own experience. That's the key. A voice is very powerful, but you need to challenge it. And of course, there's the world of CBT that help with this. Your thoughts are not reality, is the idea. So speak back to it. And I would say, yes, the key is saying this, I know this. So if I talk to that voice back, I say, look, I have found this to be true. This stuff has worked for me over 20 years. You can't take that away. And by contesting and speaking back to the voice, it sounded like this huge big bear in the corner rumbling away. But actually, if you bring it out to the light, it's just a gibbering little monkey. And it often loses its power because of that. Now, sometimes it's not. That's not the way. The other method I suggest, the second one, is befriend the voice. Where's that voice coming from? That voice is coming from my mother, who's basically saying, right, don't embarrass yourself. You're going to put something out, it'll be an embarrassment. Don't do it. And you soothe that voice. You say, Mum, thanks, but you're going too far here. I'm going to put this out, and it's all right if I get embarrassed. You befriend the voice. Find out where its source was. It often started in an origin that was not trying to do you harm. A third one is ask God to share the burden. Gee whiz, you know, duh, ask God. Yes, I know it does sound, you know, kind of blindingly obvious, but I propose a method to say, look, what can you not do alone here in this setup? Take that to God and then say, look, I need help in this way, and figure out how you're going to know. So what I said is, I said, look, I need to write 1,000 words today, and by the end of the day, I would like to know and feel that you have been a co-author. Make it very specific and then see what happens, right? Invite God into it, but figure out what can you not do alone, write it down, and how will you know you've been helped or not? And so that I often find helps too. Sometimes these don't work, quite honestly, you know, and it's a combination. I'm not saying all five need to be tried and all five are equally efficacious. And then the fourth tactic is dilute the voice. What I mean by that is make sure we have enough in our life so that even if we have a complete catastrophe, according to the, it's not the end of the world, right? Now, very often if people have children, these are kind of natural diluters. You know, yes, I went and spoke and it was an absolute disaster, but my kids still love me. You know, so you must make sure your life is filled up, because a voice really wants to say, everything depends on this. And if it goes wrong, it's over. And so you make sure that your life is filled with other things that relativize or shrink the power of the voice. Now, what I did, I have a little method that I was taught by an Orthodox priest called Gleb Yakunin. And he went into the jail in Gulag for 5 years. And they said, you're a priest, you can have one thing. What would you want to take? He said, I'll take these. These are his prayer beads. And Orthodox prayer beads are 33, one for every year of the life of Jesus. And they're split into three groups of 11. I don't know why, neither did he. But this was his method. Every morning he got up and he counted off 11 reasons why he was glad to be alive. 11 reasons why he's glad to be alive. God, I thank you that that man who tried to rape me last night did not succeed. God, I thank you that I still have my teeth because nobody else does in this, with this diet. And he pushed himself to be thankful. Nobody's thankful in the gulag. No one. Everybody's bitter. But he pushed himself. And then he counted off another 11 reasons why he was glad Jesus Christ was his Lord. Right? So he said, Lord, I thank you that when you walked on this earth, you made a special point of speaking to people who were completely ignored and blanked out. Women, children, for example. If you have time for them, you have time for me. And so he would go on like that. And then finally, he would just count off 11 things he just had to leave into the hands of the Spirit. Lord, my wife is sick in Moscow, thousands of miles away. What can I do? I leave her health in your hands. There's a man with real mental illness in the cell. He wants to kill me. I leave his health in your hands. What can I do? And for Yakunin, that was the Trinity. You look up to God, from whom all things come, the Father, God Almighty. You look to Christ, who's personal, and that's where you draw your power, because you're not going to make it with just your own strength of will. And then finally, you put into the Holy Spirit what needs to be done, because we're not in as much control of our life as we think. Now, what it does is that it fills up a day with thankfulness. And when you push yourself to do a discipline like that, it dilutes the power of some voices that are basically saying, now it's all going to be a disaster. Yes, but you've got a context of thankfulness. And you think, you know, what's that all about? I mean, it's got a guy through the gulag for 5 years. So it's not a minor little thing. And I've been doing it for 20, and I really recommend it. So that's the fact that I need to remember to count here, but that's number four. And number five is create a community of contradiction. We can't fight a voice alone. You need others. You need others in your life to help you, to say, no, actually, that's not you. Don't worry about that. And very often, remember, that's a big community, and it could even include the dead. I remember there was this a banker who was sacked, you know, like a lot of them were, 5 minutes to clear out his desk, and he was really angry. And for a year, he just wrote a blog about how black and ghastly his bank was. And his sister once visited him, and they said, you know, where have you gone? You're just filled with rage. And so he began to read The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexander Dumas. And that became part of his culture of contradiction, because that's a book that tells you that if you live for revenge, you're going to be very unhappy. And he reads it every year, because he needs to hear another voice to say, don't live for revenge. And I mean, this can take all kinds of forms. I remember a friend who was terribly abused when she was a child. And her father one day said, God hates you. God hates you. And he did some terrible things to her. But once, when she was five, she was taken to Sunday school. And the teacher said, draw a picture of our beautiful house. So she did. She was quite artistic. And then at the end, the teacher said, now, put that on your chest. And remember, God lives there. And this was astonishing to this girl. No, my father said God hates me. But no, he lives here in this beautiful house, in me. And that completely changed her attitude, so that when the father's voice came in, God can't love you. You steal this, you do that, you're terrible, you're disgracing us. She kept thinking of that. To this day, in her 60s, she needs to remember and curate that memory. So she draws every year another picture of a beautiful house, and she puts it on her fridge. She needs to keep accessing the memory. because it's part of her community of contradiction. And so in these ways, we fight our voices. How are we doing for time? Not too bad. I just want to end a little bit with a little challenge to you, but I do want to hear your thoughts on this and have some comments, because I really don't want to come across as the oracle on this, and there are phenomenal books on various aspects of these that are out, and I'm happy to recommend them. But I think that these voices are really quite important. If we get to know them, they're not neutral. Positive and negative voices have dangers. And essentially, they're wanting to keep us from showing up to our own lives, to others, to God. And I suspect they will succeed if we're not aware and able to engage with them. But if we are aware, then I think if we can use these tactics and call them out, talk back to them, shrink them, create a community of contradiction, all these kinds of things, what we find that what might be ruining us then turns to renewing us. The voices actually, in the end, can be quite helpful, just like they were for Jesus. They're pointers, in the end, to that deeper destiny, that deeper self. That's the idea. And I think maybe nothing is more important in this world than that each of us learn how to bring all of ourselves to the present moment. I mean, that's essentially mindfulness. There's a big mindfulness craze, and it's important. I love mindfulness. And the essence of mindfulness is to come to bring all of yourself to the present moment without wishing it were otherwise. That's the key to it. And but again, that's one of the tactics. Mindfulness, you know, I think needs other things to deal with these voices. I think they're too powerful just for a single tactic to work. But correct me on that if you find that to be the case. I think nothing's more important than that each of us know how to bring all of ourselves to this world, to God, to each other in the present moment. And can we offer that? And can we think that we might need to be part of somebody else's community of contradiction? So somebody may be longing to know us better and to have us to speak into their lives. Maybe it's been long enough. I heard an unknown voice behind me say, it says in the Psalms, "Now I will take the load from your shoulders. I will free your hands from your heavy tasks." Yes, this stuff about voices, it's a bit weird. I get it. Is it necessary? I think it is. But it's also rather beautiful, because these voices don't just oppress us, they can renew us if we know how to deal with them. Thanks very much, and let's just take some questions and comments. Now, we have a mic at the front, but feel free to bellow if you want, because I can just restate the question. Any thoughts or comments? You don't have to ask a question. You might have your own take on it. Yes, please. Yes. The question is temptation, in that sense, in the reading that the gloss I've given it, is it the best term for what happens to Jesus? Because the temptation, in the end, is actually very useful. If you know where a voice is coming from, for example, but it's in practice, it's very hard to say that voice is diabolical. Most voices come from ourselves. And they're not necessarily from a purely evil source. But if they are, then reversing the voice could be a definite way of gaining guidance. But I think in practice, it's rather rare to hear a voice straight from the pit in an audible sense. And I mean, you know, we must be careful with this. You know, if one hears audible voices and you feel helpless in front of them, that could mean one needs to get to the doctor, because that could be schizophrenia. I'm talking more about just our inner dialogue in the normal sense, which I think occurs to most of us. Any other? Yes, please.
You said recognize where that voice comes from, mm. That critical voice. What about voices coming from yourself always?
Yes, and I mean, in a sense, can you figure out what the source would be? Because if it comes from yourself, it's partly cultural, it's partly parental, you know, it is a mixture. And I think investigating the source enables us to sometimes befriend it. Not always, you know, but yes, I agree. Most voices, I think, come from within ourselves. The sacred and the pit are the extreme end. And in the Bible, when, you know, God seems to address people, turns them upside down. You know, I'm not so sure. I would say, oh God, please speak to me. When he speaks to Abraham, he has to leave everything. When he speaks to Paul, Paul has to change his career. You know, when he speaks to Peter, he has to go and eat meat. You know, so these the voice of God turns people upside down. So if it comes, good and well. But I personally wouldn't go looking for it. Yeah, that's not for the tape. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes.
You talked about voices from the pit. I'm interested because there's a lot of people talk a lot in churches about, you know, it's actually God speaking to you when dot dot dots, and often it's very kind of strangely bland and fluffy, and actually, my inner voice goes, well, that's all very well, but what if God needs to say you are on a disastrous, destructive course and you're an imminent death? You know, what does God's voice sound like then? Probably not so fluffy.
Yes, yeah. No, I think it's very important. I don't want to rubbish, say, skeptical voices. They are definitely needed in church cultures, you know, because the danger often is to simply say, well, I've heard this voice, it's from God. And then everybody's supposed to say, okay, thank you very much. You know, whereas we need to stay contesting this stuff, because you still have to say, well, where did it come from? And is it adequate? You know, and so the discernment processes should not be short-circuited by the claim that some people make. So, yeah, I agree with you. How do you deal with it yourself when that happens? I mean, because very often you sound like a killjoy or somebody who's not, you know, not au fait with the church culture.
Oh, I'm not bothered about what they think you say in the church. I was just thinking generally, because there will be things maybe that God has to say to us that we don't want to hear, may not be nice. What are the things we can say about it's God when it sounds like this or feels like that without it just being, well, the Californian sound?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, no, I any insights on that? I mean, how would you help people discern whether a voice is genuinely from God or not, especially in a church context? Yes, so it'll occur in some other form. Yes, so watch this space. Yes. Yes, uh-huh, yes. He was saying, you know, is there not an answer in the idea of the community of contradiction? That we, if there is a voice, it's still happening in a context. And we have to say, respect the context. And so perhaps a voice has been taking us away, you know, from what we really are, and the church needs to come together and decide. I mean, one of my saddest experiences in churches was to go to a very famous church that had an amazing revival in 1991. And I visited it in about 2008, and it was horrible, because they were still pretending that they were in 1991. They couldn't accept that God was doing something different in their midst. And the whole, if you contradicted this idea, you were out. So it's rather sad. Churches are not often places where contradiction is allowed. Sometimes they're cultures of conformity. And that is unfortunate. You know, what does Dean Ainge always used to say? A priest loves nothing better than a prophet to stone. Other thoughts? Yes, please.
Work when actually you're not getting the voice saying whatever it is that you're
Yes, and I do explain in the book, I try to give a lot of practical exercises. I just couldn't do it. But the key exercise that I teach is what I call still, notice, and name. You have to still yourself to go down into the heart. The heart is basically a noisy room. It's full of laughter, it's full of shouts, champagne. It's like a party. But then when you get down there and you stay down there, the voices then begin to become a bit more distinct. Things that, this is why retreats are so important for Christians, because and so difficult, because you're getting still and you're going down to look at yourself, and you're, and that sight is not pretty. And this is why, you know, retreats can be extremely traumatic affairs. But looking into the heart and seeing all these different voices, slowing down, then you know, you begin to notice them. So their speed is taken away. And then you name them. I think there's a value in naming them. That's disaster voice. That's duty voice. That's undeserving voice. That's, you know, Messiah voice or whatever. And then from that, you get a sense of what, and then I have another little acronym that gets, people have read the book and said, you know, I get really fed up with this, but ADD, and it means a voice is either there to absent, dismiss, or deflect. Absent, to go somewhere else, to just leave your consciousness, essentially. Live in fantasy. Very common voices, those. And then absent, dismiss means, yes, you receive a little bit, but then in the end you bat it away. Or deflect is actually, you take it on board, but actually, you know, you push it for somebody else. I knew this great preacher. Every time he got in front of the Bible, he had a wonderful sermon. But he deflected it out to the people he was speaking to. God wasn't speaking to him anymore. Because every time he read scripture, he saw a three-point sermon. And yet it wasn't going, it was deflecting it. He thought he was actually making a phenomenal job of being a preacher. But in actual fact, he was staying rather superficial and preaching the same sermon again and again. But that's the idea of deflecting. So once you get a sense of what that voice is and how it's named, what's it doing? Is it taking me away from myself? Is it dismissing? Is it deflecting? And then you begin to sense its power. And again, I'm always trying to be positive here. Once you get a handle on this, the voice then becomes a kind of heretic for the truth, right? The voice then will guide you to the deeper self, to your deeper destiny. It doesn't stop by just saying, you know, you're awful, release me. Yeah, release you to what, though? And so this greater, more wonderful life is always beckoning. And I think the voices are left in our life for us to make the effort to engage with them so that eventually they become a kind of avatar and they lead us to our destiny of our deeper selves. Yes? I know this sounds strange. Well, it's a strange topic. The question is really, are churches getting more aware of this? Has there been a sea change, perhaps, over the last 10 years where people are more aware of this? You sound like you think there is. Yes, uh-huh. And what do you think that's due to?
I think
people are more desperate. Uh-huh. In what sense? Say more. Yes, I people want something to cling to, you know, the pressures of life and so on are driving us. I do agree to some extent that I think that there is definitely a desire for stillness. You know, I think as the world speeds up and gets more manic, there is a sense in which we say, how are we going to live? How are we going to deal with this? So we're looking for ways to get still. And perhaps through that stillness, there could be an openness to this. I still haven't heard many people in church, though, talk about voices and the way to deal with them. But I agree with you. I think there is an awareness of stillness coming into the church culture. And I think sometimes you have to, I personally have to realize that my tribe is always bigger than my local church. You know, so my community of contradiction, if you like, is much larger. I don't know what I would do without the writings of St. Augustine. You know, he's part of my community of contradiction. He's long dead. But he connects me with my deepest desires in a way that I've rarely heard people in church talk about. So church is a big community. You know, it includes the living and the dead. And so let's make the most of it in that regard. Yep. How are we doing for time? We need to be out by yes, please. Yes, a good question. Did everybody hear that? Yeah, she got a good clear voice. I think that there, if for most of the voices that are inside us and emanating from inside us, there's always an element of truth. I suspect the issue is that the essence of the voice is that it's pushing it beyond its legitimate expression or application. You know, disaster voice, for example, which affects a lot of people in public speaking. When they stand up, they'll be a flop. It'll be a disaster. It'll be hopeless. Now, they might not be that brilliant a public speaker, and it might not go that well. It could be that the voice is basically saying, hey, you know, be careful, because you're not going to wow these people with your phenomenal skills. You don't have them. And that might just be a very sober understanding of reality. But the voice very often is trying to say, so don't do it. So don't even try. And don't think that anybody could possibly like you when you do this. And that's, to me, is where you need to contest the essence of the voice. Because you say, what's your conclusion to that, though? You know, if people around Greenbelt were only the brilliant public speakers, I think it'd be a much more boring festival. Because some people have a lot of good stuff to say, and they're not phenomenal as speakers. It's just not their gift. Yes, at the back. And sorry, I need to look over here too. If you just want, I'll come back to you. And I'm conscious I'm looking over that way too much. Yes.
So you talked about Jesus hearing three voices on three occasions, and you critique two of them. Would you like to say something about the third?
There is a third occasion, which comes in John 11, where he hears a voice. I'm saying there's three occasions. There's the baptism, there's the temptations, there's the transfiguration, which again is rather a similar voice to the one in the baptism. There's another voice, actually, that Jesus does hear in John 11, but it says that in the text, if I'm not mistaken, that it's for the benefit of you that this voice is being heard. So I think probably, I don't want to, you know, split hairs about it, but I think probably the three primary voices that came from above for Jesus were baptism, temptation, and transfiguration. And of course, you know, it's important that when a voice like that comes through, what a formative experience it was for people who heard. But then there were only three disciples that heard. You know, and it was so amazing that Peter basically says, let's build three tabernacles, by which I understand to mean, can we stay up here? Can we stay up here? I don't want to go down to the valley where we're not going to hear this stuff, you know? Yeah, Dan.
Is there a danger of that leading you to have a Messiah conference?
Possibly. I mean, I think you've always got to critique this, and I say stay in a community of contradiction, because they'll help you with your own exegesis of the voice and its power. I don't think we should necessarily rely on ourselves. I have a particular advantage because I'm married to a psychologist. But not everybody can do that. But it is important to ask others. You know, am I reading this right? And open up, to their critique. It's hard, though. You know, yes, at the back there.
What about the voice of God that comes through deep spiritual discipline? You know, thy secret voice invites me still the sweetness of thy yoke to prove. I mean, there's some sort of depth in that, isn't there? And the Spirit, wherein the Holy Spirit makes it dwelling.
Oh, absolutely. I think that if that's your tradition and in the deeper spiritual life, you are getting a sense of, if you want to put it this way, the voice of God carrying the love of God for you. Very often that doesn't necessarily come in a kind of verbalized way, but it should ultimately be, you know, the goal that when we take this spiritual journey, that is where we go, that is where we end, with the sense of the absolute love of God for us, even in all our ugliness. I was terribly affected by a famous Christian that I met in Cairo. He was one of the leaders of the anti-Mubarak demonstrations. But he was a Christian from a Muslim background, and he had been put in what was called the experience. And when he was in jail, he was put into a box that was about 4 foot square, stone box. And his jailer said, most people go mad in the box. And he said, why? He said, because of the voices. The voices will drive you mad. And I thought, what are they talking about? I think I'll be quite all right in there. But after, of course, he doesn't get any food, just gets some water. After about the 10th, 11th, 12th day, he's a wreck, because he sees himself as part of the group that put Jesus on the cross. He sees how horrible he is. He descends into his heart. He notices how ugly he is. And he replays a lot of his life, and it's not pretty. And he's going down. And then suddenly, he gets a sense that God loves him as he is, sitting in his own filth. All the defenses of the ego and all the things that he built himself up on were gone. And he said, the feeling was so great because I was so empty. I'd been emptied out, and the filling is all the greater. And that, I think, is where the spiritual life comes into its own, because it is an emptying process. But the emptying is very helpful. You to look at these great saints, they all talk about those moments of absolute emptiness. But then it's usually followed by this powerful sense of filling. And I think it is related to the fact that they've been emptied out. So the filling is all the greater, and the experience is all the more transformative. But we're right on the frontiers with this. Yeah. Yes. I agree. Yep.
I had an experience where I knew I needed to forgive someone and I couldn't do it. And it was only when I looked hard at the things I was believing about them,
yes,
and identified the lies, that something was
wrong. Yes. Yeah.
And I was able to sort of reject them.
Yep.
And it was like the picture I had was a field and it's full of crows. And you have to scare the crows away.
Yes.
The voices, talking lies.
Yes.
And you can scare the crows away and it won't.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you there. I do go into that a bit more, nuance it a bit better than perhaps I have this morning. Because very often with a negative voice, it is a lie. There's a pure lie in it. And you need to, that's what we're talking back to. Sometimes the lie is attached to a piece of truth, so that we get, you know, oh gosh, you know, really, I am not that special. But in fact, talking back to the lie and bringing it out and speaking back with the truth of our experience, I think definitely brings it out to the light, where it's not this massive bear that looks all powerful. And yes, I mean, those voices that Jesus heard from the devil, they are pure wrong. You know, they are absolutely evil. There are good suggestions in terms of how to win friends and influence people, but he would have become the wrong kind of Messiah if he had listened to them. Is that us done? Okay, thank you.